Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
It is a Wednesday, June 25th, 2025. Thank you for downloading. Welcome to the Car Show. Yes, now that we are through the NBA Finals, awaiting the NBA Draft, some time to stretch out just a bit, to go ahead and do some other shows, some other podcasts that I think will be interesting. I hope you find them interesting as well. If you don't care about cars, then just skip it. Skip it and keep her moving. Church is tomorrow. Scott and Solly are Friday. Life goes on. So let me update you on a couple of car situations. First and foremost, when I'm in Wisconsin, I'm a full Russ Darrow guy. They not only advertise on the show, but I have purchased cars from them, and I know many who have done that as well, and they are a really outstanding dealership group. Now, as you may know, I do still have a residence with my wife and daughters in Virginia. And so I live in two different states. I'm in Wisconsin maybe 50% of the time, a little bit more during football season, back and forth. It's the arrangement we have. Now, in Virginia, I used to have a Kia Carnival minivan, and I actually loved it. I know, I drove a minivan by choice at age 56 with out kids that needed to be shuttled to any kind of soccer practices or anything else. It's a great vehicle, and it rides so nice. To me, it was like a six-cylinder SUV, just it wasn't lifted like an SUV, didn't have four-wheel drive, but because it was going to be a pavement car anyway, didn't care that it was not an SUV, and it was a lot cheaper and a lot roomier as well. But I got rid of it, because I realized I was going to be trying to do interviews, podcast interviews in that van. And it just was not quite big enough, didn't quite configure the way I wanted to, so I got out of it. As I was thinking about what am I getting into, my brother-in-law Todd, who knows just enough about sports to be dangerous, had finally pulled the trigger, as you heard on this podcast, with our next guest, Mr. Car Guy, Rezer, that he finally pulled the trigger on getting a Tesla. Got a Model 3 and he loved it. So when I went up to visit back in the winter, back during Christmas, I got to kind of noodle around with it. And of course, like I always do, I quickly fell in love. So I go ahead, I start doing the research on it. And the Model 3 right around the new year was a pretty good leasing opportunity. It was like a two-year lease, because you know me and commitment, I like to return things. Two-year lease. I think the sticker on it was 43, but you could get the federal discounts, and by the time the lease came out, it was 400 some odd dollars. I was like, I want it, let's go. It is an amazing vehicle. It's the Model 3 Highland Refresh 2025, the lowest end Tesla you can get. And it is still way too fast. I mean, it is so fast and so smooth and handles so precise. It is so quiet. I often find myself getting in it and then not turning the radio on because I just want to hear how quiet it is. I'm like, listen to this. Shh. And you're just cruising along. Effortless power. I mean, it's a hell of a car. I also have, I've subscribed to on a month-to-month basis, the full self-driving, which is $100 a month. People used to buy it as part of the car, they, you know, the purchase of the vehicle itself for a lifetime, and it was quite expensive. Something like, I think my buddy Jason said he got his for $11,000 on top of the price of the car. But hey, you finance it and whatever. Now I go month to month. The full self-driving is the stuff of science fiction. There's no two ways to put it. It's basically better than you think it could possibly be, given the fact this has not been around that long. It navigates things you think it couldn't navigate. It understands the sort of rhythm and flow of driving. There's only been a very few times in which I've had to overtake it to go, okay, well, hold on a second. I see what's going on here. Now, it comes with its downsides in that when you put it into full self-driving, the camera that looks at you from above the rearview mirror is a strict hall monitor. You cannot be holding your phone for more than 10 seconds maybe before it gives you a warning. And then if you don't put your phone down, if you don't start going back to looking at the road, then it will beep at you and then it'll give you a strike. And then if you get three strikes, it disables the auto self-driving for a period of, I think, a week or something like that. I know that if it gives you one strike, you can't do the full self-driving until you stop the car, get out, get back in, and restart it. So there's fail-safes in there to keep people from just getting in their Tesla, hitting go on the full self-driving, and then falling asleep. It also can tell when your eyes are closed. It can tell when your eyes are closed and your head is starting to nod a bit when your sunglasses are on. I know all this because I've tried all this. It is quite relaxing to let it drive itself. There's no question about it. But so many other cars now and other automakers have pretty much mostly self-driving features. Lane keep assist, adaptive cruise control, that kind of stuff. That on the Kia Sorento I've got in Wisconsin from Rustero, it will let me just hit automated cruise, keep me in the lane for long stretches of time. I mean, like up to a minute, I think I've timed. And so you don't really need it to make turns for you or change lanes for you. But holy shit, it's really, really good. And the scary thing is, it's getting even better all the time. So I want to play a clip here. This is when Elon Musk was being interviewed recently. There's a big war going on. Not war, but there's a race. There's a race for a fleet of autonomous cars that can take people to and fro at a fraction of the cost of even Uber and Lyft, which are going to go by the wayside. And that the future is really just us jumping into empty cars that are controlled by Skynet. Crazy shit, right? Like, this is real. This is happening. So Waymo is the company that's been spending a lot of money, a lot of R&D into their vehicles, which have a ton of tech on them. So much tech that it is very different than Tesla. Tesla has been building up its AI learning and its database of millions, if not billions, of driver miles collected and analyzed as part of the, you know, fleet of Teslas that have been sold in the country and also overseas, that it's building its driving model that Musk is insistent is better than Waymo's. Now, I'm going to play the bite, and you can go ahead and take a listen and just see what you think. And then we'll bring my guy Reza on to get his thoughts on it as well.
I'll come to Waymo because even though they only have about 700 cars, they obviously are on the market. They're in Beverly Hills all over the place.
It's a proof of concept.
They've got 28 cameras. They've got LiDAR and radar. You've had a different approach. Eight to nine cameras and the neural network. Why do you feel that that is going to be the equivalent in terms of safety profile?
Oh, I think it'll be better.
Why?
Because the way that the road system is designed is for AI. It's for intelligence, biological neural net, and eyes. That's how the whole road system is designed. So what will actually work best for the road system is artificial intelligence, digital neural nets, and cameras. And we also have the microphones so the car can hear emergency vehicles and that kind of thing.
Right. You are going to have the microphones to hear the
yeah, you yeah, need to hear.
That was a question. Right, you need to hear a fire engine or a police car.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So But that's how the whole road system is designed. It's not designed for shooting lasers out of your eyes. And what we found is that when you have multiple sensors, and they tend to get confused. So do you believe the camera or do you believe the LiDAR? Mm-hmm. And if they get confused, that's where you can, that's what can lead to accidents. So we used to have, for example, a radar in the car, but we found that the radar and the camera would sometimes disagree, and then you don't know which one to believe.
So it wasn't about expense, it was just about...
No.
Yeah. Are you seeing the data
In fact, we turned off the radars in the cars.
You turned off the radar, yeah. So, I mean, are you comfortable right now? If I were to say to you, all right, let's go, you think that you're there in terms of the safety profile you're seeing right now?
Yeah, we could take a ride today if you want, sure.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to take a ride with you anytime you want.
Incredible, isn't it? Now, I know you could say, I still think it's not going to fully be there. This is the worst we're ever going to have it. It's not going to suddenly hit a wall and stop the innovation and the progress. And there's nothing that can really prevent there to be further evolutions and implementations of the system. Now, again, I have a hard time envisioning owning a Tesla, putting it online for service in a network of robo-taxis, having strangers summon it from my driveway to go take them out to get sloppy hammered, and then do all kinds of awful things in the Tesla, vomit in the Tesla, and then have it come drive back to me. But I think even that they're going to overcome somehow by some way of sort of a social rating system where you can only do that once. I don't know. But what Musk is talking about is basically if you owned a Tesla, you could then put it in service as part of the robo-taxi fleet that would then, they'd split the money, some kind of split, with the car owner and Tesla itself. And those trips that you let your car do on its own, while you're out of town or asleep or who knows when, could help you pay for your car payment. I mean, mind-blowing stuff. And I'm not a Tesla, I'm not a Elon Musk fanboy, even though I'm sure some will say that I am. The man is complicated. I mean, he's got a billion kids out of wedlock, and he is at times unhinged. But what he is doing, oh my God, to be living in this day and age with what this guy is doing is incredible. Truly like the modern-day Thomas Edison living amongst us. So without further ado, let's talk to my man, Eric Rezenkowski, car automotive consultant to the stars and a guy who's been in the car biz his whole life and a guy who's coming off a blown out elbow at the Malcolm. Hey, is your elbow better? That's all I want to know.
We are good to go, my friend. I played my first round of golf in about since you last saw me. I shot an 86. Not proud of my putting, but my short iron game was strong.
Nice. That's great.
No
so
pain.
You avoided surgery. Rest and rehab did the trick.
Yes.
Thank
yes,
God for that. Knock on wood for that.
I was not looking forward to getting cut open because you know how they are. They just want to cut everybody open.
Well, yeah, that's the fun for them. It's what they get paid to do, these surgeons.
Right.
And however it works out, they can shrug their shoulders and go, well, you know, I tried my best. It's not rocket science. It's surgery.
Exactly. Yeah, nothing's guaranteed, but hey, let me just rack your insurance for a couple grand.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So I just played the bite that I sent you of Elon Musk talking about the space race, if you will, with Waymo for a fleet of essentially self-driving cars that will, if the timeline proves to be what I think it will, it'll eventually take Uber and Lyft out of business. But it's an interesting race because they're two very different companies that have gone about it a different way. What are your thoughts on that clip that I sent you and that I just played here?
So it's interesting because this race isn't new. Okay, Steve, years ago, Uber actually ordered, when it was first coming out with self-driving cars, Mercedes actually was making a guarantee of a huge autonomous fleet of S500s that drive themselves.
Get out.
Yeah.
So you say years ago. Give me years. Yeah. 10, 20. five.
No, let me hold on. Let me do a little quick math. I was still in Detroit, so it would have been 6-7 years ago.
Okay.
6 or 7 years ago that broke. And then that deal kind of fell apart, but then it got put back together and then it was never really talked about. So there's a lot of people that I think it's just becoming very mainstream now. I think now that they're just starting to talk about it, you know, Elon is so eccentric about telling people I'm going to do it because he's got an FU attitude, right? Yeah. But I think in the background, a lot of automakers have realized that this is kind of the race. It's not about getting autonomous driving vehicles necessarily to the consumer. It's about getting them out in mass on the road and then letting people experience it. Because if people experience it, the fear goes away and then people say, I want that. Does that make sense?
Oh.
I think that was a little bit of the marketing branding strategy. So I think there's just because you're seeing these two fight it out, I believe there's a lot of automakers who are already in that race.
Yeah, 100%. I just chronicled my experience so far, 4 months into being a Tesla Model 3 owner, and just how blown away I continue to be by the adeptness of its driving algorithm, using just cameras and not the other more expensive sensors. And what I found fascinating in that clip was how Musk said, look, at some point the technology starts to argue with each other, and then who are you going to believe?
Right. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're in uncharted territory, right? I get that there's a bunch of very, very smart individuals, much smarter than I will ever be, who work on these things. And they understand it to a level that I don't think, and I'll speak for myself, no one else, that even a guy who lives and breathes the automotive industry, it's just to a level that I'll probably never be able to comprehend. I was just born too late to understand it.
No, you're being too humble. You're plenty smart enough, and I know you understand it. You may not like it because I think you've got in your blood that old red Barchetta from Rush in your blood, which is human beings driving machines that make noise and go fast.
Well, I mean, they make noise and go fast. It's just a
purring noise.
But they still go fast.
I know, yeah. They go very fast. But it's the self-driving thing that is going to be truly revolutionary. And I was skeptical. I remember talking about this 7-8 years ago with Scott and Sally on the national show. And I said, what happens when it rains? What happens when there is cones in the road blocking off one part of the street? What happens, you know? And now I'm seeing it with my Tesla, and I'm like, it's handling this shit pretty well. The only time recently that I had to take over was there was a merging lane that had a series of orange barrels that kept getting a little bit closer to cutting off the lane. And I wasn't fully trusting that the Tesla was seeing the orange barrels. So I took over.
Yeah, which is understandable. And again, that's that human nature that, you know, this is where back to what I was just saying, where I think the race was to get it out in mass, in taxis, for lack of better words, in the Uber space, because then people got to experience it. And then they got to say, oh, this isn't that bad. I want to try it. I think it was actually a pretty genius marketing and branding move if they would have done it. It was a huge deal. But again, I do think that's the race to expose people to it, because there still is human nature involved, right? We're not a very trusting species when it comes down to it. We can say we are, but we're not.
Right.
And again, you start talking about, you know, now you're getting into the philosophical debate of AI and computers, and are they able to protect us, and are they able to do what we can do? And again, it's we are a very show me sort of society. So again, I think the more it's out in front of people, it's going to become very mainstream and people are going to want it. And again, there's a reason that every major auto brand is now trying to race to get some form of a self-driving autonomous car to their consumers.
Yeah. I think the one area that Tesla's way ahead from what I've read and heard is that they've just scooped up all kinds of data of billions and billions of driver miles with, you know, the cameras and the so-called neural networks, which I don't even know what that exactly means, but feeding it through their AI computers to get a sense of, you know, here's how you drive. And I can imagine where you've got a fleet of robo taxis that cover a certain metro area. And the more that they drive the streets from Lincoln, taking a right on Sunnyside, left on Elm, you know, pick whatever names of streets you want, that it gets so used to it knowing exactly how to drive those areas. Why would you need a burrito eating smelly incel to be sitting in the front of your Uber or Lyft to do that for you? You're just going from one bar to another and then maybe home in the burbs.
Maybe some of us like living vicariously through the guy who still lives in his mom's basement and eats burritos six times a week, Steve.
That might be the case.
Enjoy that right. moment.
You ever look at the Uber driver? You ever look at the Uber driver and think, I bet his life is so simple? You know, it's boring, but it's simple.
I click, you know, on the Uber app where it says conversation, yes or no? Oh, mine's clicked. Yes. Let's talk, baby. I want to know all about you. You tell me, Tommy. You tell me about all your problems.
If only there was a setting that said full disclosure. No conversation, some conversation, full disclosure.
Clicked instantly. Wouldn't even think twice about it.
Exactly. Well, you know, the Waymo cars are really cool, and they got a ton of expensive tech in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if they're going to necessarily win this. And I don't know what winning really looks like per se. And I'm not saying they're going to go away as a company, but it looks like Elon might have taken the shortcut to the destination you want to get to. We'll have to see.
So there's a lot of arguments right now about what it is going to look like. And again, I'm going to keep saying it. It's uncharted territory, right? But even Elon has made comments to the effect that, even electric cars isn't a mainstream thing yet. They want it to be. Obviously, it's how they make money. They make a lot of money doing it. But the truth of the matter is, you know, all the data is showing that, I'm not going to speak for the world, but in America, there is a huge reversion to gas-powered engines.
Yes.
There is a big comeback. Like, people got their fix. They got the feel of it. But again, one of the biggest hangups in America that everyone said this was going to be a problem was these cars just cannot drive the distance that people in America want to drive. This isn't like Europe or other countries where everything is relatively close to where you reside. You know, the average United States citizen is in a car for more than an hour a day. We're driving more than 10 miles to our job. And then there's everything else that goes with it. And we are not a society that likes to be disrupted for long periods of time. And what's happening is a lot of these people who have these cars as main drivers, the patience level isn't there yet to say, okay, I'm going to sit and charge my car now. They want to go. And again, there is this reversion. There is a big, you know, the secondary market for Teslas is very big, and it's a very big hit to the value of the vehicles because people don't want... You know, the average guy who's buying a guy or gal who's buying it says, well, I don't want someone's Tesla. I want to buy my own toy because that's how they view it still.
Right.
It's not viewed as a mainstream daily driver yet, no matter what anyone says.
Yeah, which is why I'm glad I'm leasing and not 100%. Reselling because I know how much the values plummet. And I think I agree that we're in a sweet spot now where they've built out a lot of superchargers. And they've done that at convenient places where I don't mind stopping for 20 minutes, like Wawa's and places like that.
Oh, you signed me up.
Oh, right. It's like, oh, sweet. 20 minutes.
Hey, did the Quick Trips have them yet back home? Because my God, I'd hang out at a Quick Trip all day.
You know what? I haven't seen them at Quick Trips in Wisconsin because I don't think there's much Tesla penetration in the north because their range is shit in the winter.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't think they're there yet. But my point is, so we're in a sweet spot where I don't even have the supercharger installed in my home. I've just got the trickle charger. And people keep saying, oh, you got to get that. And I'm like, nah, because overnight it gives me 24 miles trickling, and that's about enough to get me into town and back. And I don't really leave the house that much anyway. And I have at times gone to superchargers in and around where I live, and it's fine. But if you were to convert every single car to electric right now, we'd be fucked. There's not enough chargers 100%. Nor enough electricity, period.
I'm in New York City right now.
Yeah.
They had rolling blackouts. It's 100 degrees here right now, just like it is back home. They had rolling blackouts in this city.
Oh, my God.
You think they can handle more electric cars?
No.
Not a chance. This isn't even an argument of, well, show me the data. People are living it. I mean, when you can't keep a grid up and now you start talking about giving, you know, 100 million Americans electric cars, I mean, the power draw is so ungodly that, again, you're not saving the world by doing it. You're probably going to make it, if we're just talking about being green for a second, you're not making it green. It's going to be worse. Where's the electricity made and how do we make it right now? So again, there's a lot of things that just, it doesn't add up yet. But it's, again, everyone, when they hear me say that, they think, oh, you're such a Tesla hater. You're such an electric car hater. No, I'm not. I've always said, I think what they're doing and what they've done is unbelievable. But what I do believe is that this whole thing where everyone thinks it has to be now, people have not game theoried out what happens if we force the major populace to go electric right now. It's a huge problem.
Yeah, it's a fun, neat niche right now. And I'm 100%. Enjoying being in the niche, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that I'm already counting the months down in my lease, because there's some pretty sweet internal combustion vehicles out there from some makers. I'm like, ooh,
not to change the subject on you, but have you seen this new Corvette coming?
No, do tell.
Oh, this new ZR1 coming. It's going to be the fastest production. It's the first hypercar ever produced by an American car company.
New 2026 Corvette ZR1X.
And it's got a name. There it is. Wow. Listen, you know,
available late 2025. It's not on the road yet, is it?
No, but it's coming. And listen, you know,
I saw
a
vet today.
Cars don't super excite me.
Yeah,
but daddy might need to put one in his garage.
I saw a vet today and it was red and it kind of looked a little bit fancier, even in a more sports car-ier. And I could swear now looking at this picture, you sure there's not one lucky SOB?
There might be. You know, honestly, I was just introduced to it probably a couple of weeks ago. I was under the impression that they weren't available yet. And again, the car guy should know this, especially that I'm interested in it. But unfortunately, I've had other issues to deal with in the car world.
Right.
But I don't think, you might have been looking at it just as ZR1.
Okay.
I mean, they do exist. It's just this is a different version of
this
it.
This is the X.
Yeah, this is the X. This is the new big bad boy. I mean, and it's going to compete with the stuff like the Bugattis and the McLarens. And it is a legit hypercar at 1250 horsepower. I mean,
so it's combination internal combustion and electric.
Mm-hmm.
1250 horsepower. Uh-huh. Under 0 to 60 in under 2.0. Get out of here.
And listen, you know me, I am not a huge, like, I got to have something. And again, especially if when it comes to that, it's not necessarily an American car that does it. Never has it been a Chevy. But my God, Steve,
Wow. That
thing is phenomenal. And again, I know I don't mean to sway you from electric to gas, but
in the car
world right now, a hyper car by an American car maker is groundbreaking.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be cool to watch. So there's two things about the Tesla that are driving me around the wall, around the bend, up the wall, whatever. Number one is, and this is a small gripe, but because it's been so damn hot lately, it's a glass roof that's tinted that most of the time is fine. The last 3 days, though, in the DMV have not been most of the time. They've been miserable.
Right.
And so the other day when I'm driving around, just a short little errand, 15-minute drive, that 100-degree summer sun is beating on that tinted roof, and I could feel the heat radiating on my head. And there's no option to then pull a velour cover, to close the sun like you would of a normal sunroof.
Uh-huh.
And I know this is a limited thing, but I know there's a lot of people in Phoenix that have Teslas, and I'm thinking, don't they get sick of this as well? So it's a feature I really don't like.
You know, my theory is, and again, I'm only guessing, it's just because of now living, going from the Midwest down to the Southeast.
Yeah.
I think that when Phoenix summer is normal to you, you probably don't notice it as much as you are a Wisconsinite and you have 2 weeks of 95 to 105 right. degree heat, where all of a sudden it's very noticeable for you. You know, it's like I came to New York and right now it was 105 degrees today. Oof. And everyone's like, oh, my God, I'm dying. And I'm like, this is a Tuesday for me.
Well, you live in West Paul. You live in Naples. So you're used to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. That's that. And that's my point, that you just become conditioned by it.
Right.
So, again, it makes sense to me that would be something that you'd be like, oh, my God, I can't, I can't feel this.
My guess is it's probably cost saving on materials and or aerodynamics, and that 98% of the time, it's going to be just fine.
100%. And, it probably, like I was saying, it probably has to do with, just like you were saying, cost savings, aerodynamics, but it probably has to do with weight and distribution. Like, right. People don't realize all those little things start to add up in these cars, and it's very important for the car to operate functionally the way they say it does. It's got to be a very certain weight and very certain design. You know, there's no getting away with, getting cute with it.
Yeah. The navigation screen and the Google Maps that you can see with the weather overlay, which is pretty accurate, but not as accurate as I would like, as I'm trying to figure out, are these thunderstorms really going to hit the golf course I'm driving to today or not? It's very good. But the lack of Apple CarPlay integration is just killing me. Because, mm-hmm. Yes, you can sort of kludgily tell the Tesla, hey, connect my messaging app and display them here and blah, blah, blah. It works. It breaks. You got to reconnect. It's not as slick. So frustrating. Tell the story that you told. You know, one of the things I love most about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast. In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. If you are overwhelmed by the hiring process or you've been struggling to get your job posts seen, listen up. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. Your post jumps right to the top of the page for relevant candidates, so you reach exactly who you want faster. And it makes a huge difference, according to Indeed data. Sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this podcast will get $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the podcast by saying you heard about it right here on this pod. Indeed.com/Charlie Zulu Alpha Bravo Echo. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need. You've heard the saying a million times, the best offense is a good defense. But those words of wisdom extend far beyond sports. In life, the best defense is making sure your life insurance policy is right for you. That's why I go to SelectQuote for the best coverage at the best price. Now that's what I call a power play. Unlike other one-size-fits-all life insurance companies, SelectQuote's licensed agents work for you in as little as 15 minutes. They'll compare policies from top-rated carriers to find you the best fit for your health and your budget. And they work for you for free. No medical exam? No problem. They partner with providers offering same-day coverage up to $2 million without needing to visit your doctor. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at SelectQuote.com/Zabe. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at SelectQuote.com/Zabe today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/Zabe.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Told me when we were down in Pinehurst golfing as to why apparently, Tesla couldn't get the permission from Apple to do CarPlay.
So I'm going to give the parts that I feel very confident in saying.
Okay.
So it all comes down to simple. Apple and Mr. Musk do not get along. There was really a big disagreement about certain options and certain ways things were going to go down and how things were going to integrate and who was going to partner with who. And, you know, if I remember correctly, Steve, again, I'm kind of blanking on the whole kicker to the story. You might have to refresh my memory and it'll kick in.
It was the dispute between the stock price between Tim Cook shorting Tesla stock.
Thank you. It was that. So what ends up happening is that initially what ends up happening is Tesla is, it was not a secret that Tesla was a majorly shorted stock. Everyone thought it was going to fail. Everyone thought there's not a chance this guy's going to survive. So all the major money players out of New York took all the big billionaires' money, and Tim Cook and the Steven Spielbergs and all the big players of the world shorted Tesla to death. Well, what ends up happening is Elon Musk turns it around, and Elon Musk says, ha ha, look at me, screws those guys out of a bunch of money. And then what ends up happening is Tim Cook comes back and pretty much tells Elon Musk that he's not going to now partner with Tesla to put Apple into the cars. So it was like this whole big back and forth of billionaires fighting, like, you know, like 15-year-olds. Like, I'm going to take my ball and go home. All because they all tried to screw each other in the first place. Yeah. There was nobody actually trying to help each other. And so again, I don't foresee that ever happening.
And you told me that Musk said, okay, I'll pay this much if you just give me CarPlay. And mm-hmm. Apple said no. Then he said, how about more? And Tim Cook is like, nah, still no. Like, yep. He asked third time, and then he just said no again, and he realized, okay, I guess this is going on a lot longer.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's pretty much a dead issue at this point. I mean, there's root, and again, I don't have anything to validate what I'm about to say, but I can tell you what the rumor mill in the auto industry is that part of the acquisition of Twitter for X was that he's creating this whole giant platform that eventually is going to become similar to Apple's, you know, platform.
Right.
And what they're going to do is you're going to see the whole thing. He says he's not doing phones and all this other stuff, but what you'll see is you'll see that whole X platform with messaging and everything else. Right. That's what's going to come and compete with Apple.
Yeah.
Again, we'll see.
We'll see down the road. I do know that Apple Car. I feel like I got an Android car, though, because
kind of.
I've had some Android phones and I've switched over many mirrors ago. I'm like, let me give it a shot. And I quickly hated it. I think I did it twice. Went from iPhone to Android, hated it, ran back, tried it one more time, super hated it, ran back, never going to go back. I feel like that's how I am with the car, because I used to be able to get so much done with voice texting using Apple CarPlay, just rolling down the road while watching what I'm doing driving, because it was so seamless and so good. And now I can't do that, and that's a bit frustrating. So I want to tell you about a car buying experience I had, and you can give me your thoughts.
Let's go.
Because my mom, 85 years old, had finally decided it's time for a new car. She could still drive, still sharp in that regard. Thank God for that. And her Acura MDX 2010 was pretty dated. I mean, 15-year-old car.
I've heard about this car.
Yes, you have, because I talked to you about it with my pops. Uh-huh. So anyway.
We tried to get her out of it a long time ago.
Exactly. Well, yeah. She finally was like, okay, I'm ready to do it. So she's thinking about replacements. My first thing I said to her was, well, get another Acura. Because I want my mom to be fully comfortable with the ergonomics and the interior layout of the buttons and the font. You know, I want it comfortable.
Right.
Because new cars are so complicated. I'm like, just get another Acura. You know what her hang-up was? The number 50. Because the Acuras were starting in the low 50s.
Right.
And I'm just trying to go, Mom, we've been over your and Dad's estate and portfolio.
Right.
You're not going to run a. I'm like, it doesn't matter. So you're financing or leasing a $53,000 car versus $43,000. Here's the difference monthly. And it was, I forget what the number was. It was like 70 bucks. I'm like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And she couldn't get over that. So I kind of banged my head against the wall about that. And it was clearly going to be a sticking point. So I didn't push it. She wanted a Subaru. You know why? Her brother Tom has a Subaru in Lake Tahoe. Because why wouldn't Lake Tahoe people have Subarus? right? And my sister, my mom's daughter, has a Subaru, a Crosstrek, and she loves it, okay?
Okay.
And so that's the way she's leaning. Now, I'm not super into the Subaru brand, although I hear it's a good brand. I know it's borderline a cult. But I try to tell her, look, while we're shopping, you want to take a look at a Kia? Do you want to take a look at a Hyundai? Can I at least get you to the Acura dealer? Because there's now, I guess, a trim called the ADX, which is an even slimmer version of a either midsize SUV or compact SUV as a category, right?
Right.
And at the end of the day, my mom was just like, nah, I want a Subaru. And so I'm like, okay, fine, great. So we go to the Subaru dealership, and I'm actually quite impressed. She ended up getting a Forester, which is supposedly their best-selling car. I thought the Outback was, but they say it was the Forester.
It's a great car.
We hooked up. Yeah, we hooked up with a very sweet salesman named Victor, young guy, family's from Venezuela, or no, El Salvador, but he is a perfectly Americanized, super sweet young man who said, yeah, I've had 9 cars already and I'm only 26. And I said, my man.
Well on your way, buddy. Welcome to the club.
Right. So he's a car guy, but he was very sweet and very patient. And I knew right then, I'm like, look, I would like to give him and this dealership the business. Because I didn't have the stomach to try to go fight for every inch and every dollar and have 4 different Subaru dealerships in a 70-mile radius bidding for me on, you know, the lowest price and this and that and everything else.
Right. Right.
But when we sat down and he, you know, gave me the piece of paper, here's what it is. I, of course, see the dock fee, $995, and I see freight, $1,450, and I see what is essentially the Jerry Lundegaard True Coat of 2,000 some odd whatever dollars. And I immediately take the pen, I go, well, we're not doing this. Freight, you got to get rid of this. It's not my job to get the cars on your lot. And this dock fee seems like a lot. Well, he started with a dock fee. He says, well, this is framed on the wall. We charge this to everybody. We do this to ensure that we're going to at least make something on every purchase, blah, blah, blah. There's no way to negotiate out of this. And I just kind of left it alone. I said, okay, fine. He ended up splitting. He went halvesies on the freight. I took that as a win. I didn't hammer him any further on that. And once I told him we weren't getting the True Coat, he was fine. And he came in at a price a couple grand under the MSRP, which I'm sure I probably could have banged for more. But again, I'm just trying to get my mom into a new car that she's happy with. And she's leasing it for 2 years anyway for very low miles because she doesn't drive very much. And her payment is almost $350 maybe at that. So I'm not fighting tooth and nail for everything. You tell me, how do you think I did?
I think you did great. I mean, you know, let's cover it. Let's cover the three pieces here real quick. So again, the biggest concern I tell people all the time, listen, when you're there, let's start here. Let's go back one further. Do you know the number one reason somebody doesn't buy a car at a dealership?
Why?
This is actually proven. Because of the salesperson. Not because of the price, not because of the car, not because of the dealership. Because of the salesperson. They don't like their salesperson. So again, when you find a salesperson you like, you got to slow down for a second and say, okay, let's see if we can hammer something out here, because that's the biggest reason people don't buy a car.
Wow.
Okay. So let's talk about the things that they charge you. Number one, an admin fee, right? Or a dock fee. Every dealership has it. And the reality is that they do make some money off it. But the number one reason for it is that we house your information for several years, and it's to pay to house the to put it in a secure place, to make sure that it's taken care of. And then after 7 years, we destroy it, and it goes to destroying that information. That's where a large chunk of that usually goes in the dealership.
I had no idea.
That's the reason. And now, if I charge it to one, I must charge it to all. If I do not charge it to somebody, it opens me up to litigation for every other person I've ever charged it to. What I do for one, I must do for all. So again, dock fees, typically, no dealership in their right mind is going to tell you, you don't have to pay that. You're always going to pay it. So everybody who's listening, just choke that one down. Okay. You're always paying it. Now, when we start talking about stuff like freight, That's weird to me. And again, maybe there's something that changed with the Subaru. I haven't been dealing. None of my clients right now are. I actually take that back. This dealer is a Subaru dealer, but I'm not dealing with that store. So I don't know. Maybe Subaru doesn't outright charge their freight on their window stickers. But it's called destination. It's not called
destination fee.
Destination.
Yeah.
And it's typically built into the price of the car and it will be on the window sticker. So again, I would look at that and go, I would question it too. I would say, you're going to have to show me this, that I did that. It wasn't already paid for in the car. I'm not paying for freight twice. And again, I think your logic is good. I'm not paying for you to get your product here. That's not my problem.
Right.
You pay to get the product here. I buy product from you. That's how this goes.
Right.
The third one. So again, a lot of dealerships, they do certain things. As you know, I was not a huge fan in my stores of tacking on aftermarket product at the time of negotiation like that. I'm not a huge fan of that. I'm not saying that it's not good. I'm not saying that it doesn't have a place. And a lot of dealers do it for a good cause. There are some products out there that, again, we know how expensive it is to fix some of these problems these days. And here's the truth. Like, we're putting stuff like ceramic on cars and certain things because we know the paint, when it goes or if there's a problem, it is so ungodly expensive to fix. And then guess what happens? You're not this. And I love you customers, but I'm saying this from my heart. You don't take responsibility for your own cars. When does the car become yours? The minute you sign the paperwork. But again, they come back in and it's our problem to fix your paint or to fix this or to fix that. So what the reason for doing some of these things are, we know that certain vehicles, and again, it just happens. These are highly mass produced, big, giant pieces of machinery. We know certain things have problems, and there are certain products out there that we do want to tack on our cars, because at the end of the day, we know that $1,800 over the next 4, 5, 6 years, that's going to cost you $12 a month. If that problem goes wrong, it costs you $12 a month. It doesn't cost you $12,000 at the time to fix it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So we have the foresight because we're in the business. Now, let me just asterisk that. Not all products are created equal, folks. Not all of them are worth it. So again, do your homework, pay attention. Not everything is great, but some are.
Yeah. Well, I think if I was buying it for myself and it was a fancier car than a Subaru and I was planning on owning it for 5, 6, 7 years, unlikely because I'm that kind of guy that can't sit still. I would see the value in it for sure. And I would consider it for sure.
So that's where I always got into it. And dealers get mad at me and they're going to hate me. If any of them are listening right now to this, they're going to hate me for saying this. But again, anybody who tacks that stuff on and you want to lease a car, listen, tell them to choke on it. You don't want it. That's the whole point of a lease, that I don't need to worry about those things.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Now, here was the big bugaboo. It took us 4 hours to complete this transaction.
Have you been in a Chrysler store buying a car lately?
Why? Is it worse?
Oh, it's worse.
Oh,
it is ungodly long.
God, I mean, you know, we took a test drive. My mom was comfortable with it after about an hour. And then the time stopped. Time went backwards, or so it seemed. And I'm just thinking to myself, why is this taking so long? So we finally got into the finance manager's office, and now he had the very fancy desk that is a giant iPad that you sign with an electronic pen. And for most people, it's not a big deal. But my God, for an 85-year-old woman, it was like, okay, mom, here, just click, click, scribble there,
something
click,
out of the Twilight Zone. Where am I right now? Am I on a spaceship?
Exactly.
Honey, am I on a spaceship?
Right. It just took way longer than I would have liked. But I guess that's part of the deal.
This is where I'm going to protect my dealer brethren.
Yes.
You know, there is no dealership in the world that wants to keep you there longer than you need to be there. Let me just start with that.
Right.
Just remember that. Now, am I saying that there are some inefficient stores in the world? Absolutely. I wouldn't have a job anymore at this point if I didn't have inefficient stores. That is my job. I go into inefficient stores and we fix them.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it's almost like most states every year are adding another piece of paperwork we have to get from you. You have to sign this. You have to get us this. Get us a copy of your birth certificate. Get us a copy of your firstborn's footprint at the hospital. Get us a copy of this and sign this. Every year, it's like more and more crazy stuff. And again, nothing about that streamlines the car buying process. But again, these are externals that none of us in the auto industry cover. I mean, all these documents, they're all legal documents. They're all bank documents. I mean, it's the paperwork that's actually ours in a dealership is very minimal compared to everything you sign in a dealership. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that it's the way of the world, and it's made it very difficult to be, to make it feel like it's happening in a timely, efficient manner. Yeah. It's a big problem right now, and we know it, and, and we in the auto industry are working on it.
Well, and on, as I was getting more and more steamed, like what has taken so long, I did stop to consider, look at the scope of this financial transaction that we're conducting, and I'm bitching because it's taking a couple of hours. Like, and there was hiccups along the way. For example, my mom had a insurance card that had her current insurance, but it was not the current card, you know,
right,
where it gets renewed. And they're like, yeah, unfortunately for a lease,
gotta get it.
You got to get it. Luckily, she was able to find it in the car, but she walks like an 85-year-old, so that was a slow process. Then I had texted her in the morning saying, hey, Mom, bring the title in case we find something we like. Well, I forgot. My mom does not really look at her phone and her texts. I got to call her, right? So she missed the signal on that, but they had a workaround saying, look, you sign this document that say that says you'll promise to bring it to us in the next day or two, and we can still go ahead with it on your trade. And I'm like, okay, great. So there was a lot going on there that I probably, poo-pooed about the length of the transaction.
You know what I always put in a, again, it's all perspective, right? Because once again, we live in a society of I want it now, right?
Right.
But I like to put this in perspective for people. What are the two largest purchases that the average person ever makes in their lifetime?
Home and car.
There you go. And let me ask you a question. What's the longest car buying experience you've ever had?
Well, this one, I guess 4 hours. I might have had a longer one.
What was the shortest home buying experience you've ever had?
A lot longer than that, I can assure you.
So again, we're doing pretty good comparatively to the other big purchase that anyone makes in their lifetime.
Right.
You know?
So the other takeaway that I took from this, being the family member that I was going to help shepherd Mom through this purchase, was the buyer has to be ready. They have to be ready, and they can't be forced, and it's got to be ripe. So I was just very gently letting my mom come to the point in which she was ready to get this new car. And then when she was, then I'm like, we're doing this. Let's get this thing today.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, I think we've talked about this before, and about, you know, that a bunch of stores, they'd have different, you know, the sense of urgency and creating the urgency. And do I want you to buy today? Do I want you to let you go home and think about it? And there's all different philosophies about it.
Right.
But again, it's it, in today's world, nobody really walks into our dealerships who hasn't spent an absorbent amount of time, at the very least, on their phone, looking at 50 different cars, reading 50 different articles, trying to educate themselves as quickly as they can, because they're arming themselves because they're thinking to coming, they're coming to battle with a pirate ship with us, you know? So the truth is we have gotten to a point where we do, will directly ask you a little bit, like, you know, and again, you hear it all the time when you buy a car, right? Like, what's stopping you from buying it today? And we're not asking you that because we just want to slam you in a car.
As a pressure. You're asking as a legitimate, are there obstacles I can take away to make this happen?
Because we know that you have done an immense amount of research already. The data tells us this. Listen, we have all the data, folks. We know how much time you're spending on the computer looking at cars. We know how much time. Hey, we can see you doing it just so you know.
Hey, what are you doing snooping around at my browser history?
We pay a lot of money to be able to see it, just so everybody knows. So we know you're educated already. So when somebody gets in there, and we know, here's what we know. We know that we do it every day. So sometimes we take for granted the stress and anxiety of buying a car. So we have to remind ourselves. And we know that you do it every 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years. So we do it a lot more. So when we ask you the question, what's stopping you today? We're not asking to pressure you. We're asking because we do have the knowledge and we do have the information. And what we don't want you to do is leave our store without proper information. We know you might walk out still and say, I want to sleep on it. We get it.
Yeah.
But we don't want you to leave having a misconception of what's right. actually happening.
Right.
So don't be offended when a salesman asks you what's stopping you today, because our anticipation is you wouldn't waste 5 hours of your day to just come shoot the shit with us, guys. We're not that special.
I love it. Oh, God. There's a lot of good cars out there. My buddy Jason just got into a Hyundai Santa Fe, and he loves it. Got rid of his Ram 1500 Limited, which is the truck I still yearn for when you had me in that beautiful truck, because he realized that he doesn't really use the truck bed for anything, and that the Santa Fe is runs great, and it's looks like it's at a great price point as well. I'm a huge Hyundai fan from when I used to own the Deer Slayer, aka the Hyundai Genesis, that I ended up selling to my dad. So I'm sure it's a nice SUV. And by looking at the price point of it, I think they're coming at Kia with the Telluride to say, look, we want a piece of this sub $50,000 luxury SUV.
Well, Kia and Hyundai is the same company. It's the same car, different badging. It's like, Toyota, Lexus, Honda, Acura.
Yeah. Well, and look, Kia, Hyundai, Genesis, they make great stuff.
I'm a huge fan.
Because they control their entire supply chain, you explained to
me. Yes, they do. I mean, they've expanded out. I mean, to grow, they just need to. But the predominance of Kia and Hyundai built are not outsourcing it. It is them in Korea. They are very controlled about what they're doing. And again, you know, here's what's the one biggest gripe about a Kia or a Hyundai. They're very easy to steal. Well, yeah. I still think it's a hilarious. I think I told you this story, but it's hilarious. The United States government, one of our senators or congressmen, like, made some big stink about it and actually wanted to put a sanction on Korea to fix the Kia problem, because it's like the number one stolen car in metro areas.
Right.
Not that I'm helping it, but again, I don't work. I can say what I want, right? But the president of Kia said, maybe you should work on your society a little bit more, because we don't have that problem in Korea.
Oh, snap.
So again, this is just the difference in cultures when it comes to the car world, because
I'm with the Prime Minister of Korea more than you would think. But I don't know why can't they just make it harder to steal? Is it money?
You know, I think, you know, I was with Kia for a long time, and I spent a lot of time with the Kia executives. Number one, very, very fun group when you go to their dealer conventions in Las Vegas.
I bet.
Very, very fun group. They know how to throw a party. They're amazing people. But I will tell you that they're very steadfast in their philosophies, and they are there isn't much that's going to sway them or convince them that they should do anything different for anybody if they think it works for them. And again, that's kind of what's made them a really kind of staple household brand between Kia and Hyundai and Genesis. We're going to do it our way. This is what works for us. This is what our customers like, and we're not going to change because you think you have a better idea.
Yeah. They ride great. They run really well. It's a very solid brand. I just wish they would tell somebody, anybody, who is picking their wheel styles to knock it the fuck off. I've seen more ugly rims now, and that's a huge frustrating thing to me. If a car has bad shoes, I will not buy it.
I won't touch it. It is one of my biggest arguments right now with people it's not just them. It is a lot of automakers right now. Whoever is designing rims, I understand for electric cars, they need certain designs and all whatever, but the gas powered vehicles for the major 16 brands, who's ever designing their wheels, we need to do him like old Yeller and take him out back and put a bullet in him, because
absolutely.
It is awful.
Yeah, he needs to be waterboarded, he or she, whoever's designing him, because I look at the rims going, who would like this? Show me the survey. Show me the focus group testing that says, this is what we want here.
We put a big, it looks like there's a big like 60-year-old cast iron pan on the wheel, and somebody looked at it and went, nailed it. Nailed it, boys.
Nailed it. Let's take off early from work and go play some golf. Nailed it.
Wrap it up, guys. Got it. Today's done. Let's moving on.
All right.
Oh my God.
Anything else, as I've taken up an hour of your time today, that you want to riff on? You want to riff on sports? You want to riff on golf? You want to riff on life?
You know, Steve, we didn't get a chance while we were out in North Carolina. Steve, I want your take I want your take on this new, this, what is his name? The new pitcher. You know, I'm not in Milwaukee enough.
Jacob Mizorowski.
This kid, is he unbelievable or am I just taking crazy pills?
No. No, he is a true phenom. And tomorrow on the radio show, it's going to be Phenom Day. I'm going to ask the question, who's your favorite sports phenom and why? Because he's in that category. I mean, 11 innings pitched, he only gave up one hit in his debut in the majors. And he throws electric stuff. His average fastball velocity was 99 point something. He's got breaking stuff that is electric as well. Big kid. You know, he's facing Skeens on Wednesday night at AmFam. It's going to be unbelievable. The two most dominant power pitchers in baseball. But as the Brewers analyst, studio analyst Vinny Rotino said, he goes, look, for fans of the Brewers and the Miz, just keep yourself grounded. Because remember, he only started throwing strikes like 5 minutes ago.
Right.
Because that's the big thing with a lot of these power pitchers. You got to get it over the plate.
I mean, I watched this kid pitch a little bit. I caught some of the game the other a couple nights ago when he was pitching, and I'm watching this kid throw the ball, and I'm looking at him. Did that guy just throw an 88 mile per hour breaking ball?
Yeah.
Like, did he throw? It is unreal watching it. I mean, it's almost like it's CGI.
Right. The ball doesn't look like it's dropping a few inches like normal. It looks like it's rising because it's coming in on a wire. It looks like a video game almost.
Yeah, it that's literally how I would. Yeah, that is a perfect way to describe it. That it's not, it doesn't look real. It's got to be. It looks like superimposed. And I'm watching it. And I'm like, okay. I was by myself, right? So I don't know if I'm watching and I don't have somebody to riff with and be like, is this guy a real deal or is this guy just, did he find the one lucky strike?
Yeah. No, it's fun to watch, and you know, you just,
and let's be honest, he might be facing Skeens the other on Wednesday night, but the real question is Livy Dunn coming?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. Wouldn't you love to show Livy and Paul the better parts of Milwaukee in the summer?
Listen, she looks like she's a very nice person.
Oh, yeah. Did you see Livy?
Nice person.
Did you see Livy Dunn with a tall boy Miller Lite watching the College World Series?
You know, Steve, it just, she looks like she's a good Catholic girl that, you know, someone you'd really want to bring home to mom and dad.
Pretty girls who wear ball caps with ponytails pulled through the hole in the back is one level for a lot of guys.
You know what my selling point was? I saw a video over the other night. I was just scrolling through, right before I went to bed, scrolling through trash social media, and she's walking into the baseball game, and some guy dumps a drink all over her. And
oh, yes.
Somebody who's a celebrity and who's a big deal. You know how they react to that sort of stuff. And she was like, oh, my God, don't even worry about it. Who cares?
Right.
And I'm like, oh, man, now I actually really got to like this girl. And I guess I got to
She seems cool and grounded. Also, so in addition to the ponytail through the baseball cap, I think for a lot of guys, and probably me included, a pretty girl with a 16-ounce tall boy beer is also an extra level of because it just shows you that they're – just a regular gal out for a good time. Like, hell yeah. Give me the tall boy. Let's go.
Uh-huh. 100%. Hey, Steve, listen, you've met my wife. I mean, you know
she's
that.
She's it.
I mean,
championship attitude.
You're hitting all my hot buttons, isn't it? That's my wife right there. I mean, listen, I know we're talking about Livy Dunn, but my wife, baseball cap, tall boy. I mean, you don't,
there
need,
you
to,
go.
You don't need to sell me. I'm in. Right. Yeah, 100%.
Don't girl, need to sell me. Already bought the model. Got it sitting in the garage. Very happy.
Yeah.
10 out of 10, no notes, as the kids say.
No notes.
All right. Rezer, you're the man. Enjoy New York City for what? One more day, then you're heading back south?
No, I'll be back south on Friday playing golf by Saturday morning.
All right. Take care of that elbow, and we'll hook up soon. All right, buddy?
I will. I'll talk to you soon, Steve. Now shut up and drive.
Shut up and drive. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again. You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.